Jeff Rabin has been patiently waiting online. Jeff, how are you doing, my friend?
John, I am doing great, and I give you so much credit for a beautiful Saturday afternoon to be taking on the hard issues.
Oh, boy.
And dealing with end-of-life issues or disability issues or complex legal matters, and doing that like you do every weekend, and especially on a beautiful day like this, is really a tribute to your passion for what's going on in the Chicago community.
Well, that means a lot, Jeff, because I do often wonder when I dive into these topics. It's heavy stuff for a Saturday, you know, especially coming after my good friend Hochberg, who's helping you out with important things like HELOCs and home renovation, and then I come in with end-of-life care. It's like, oh, okay, a little heavy here, but I appreciate that. And what you do is important work, too. Look, our job here at WGN is to help inform. And part of that information is knowing what your rights are in certain situations and knowing who can help you. And sometimes that's help financially. Sometimes that's help mentally. And I feel like, Jeff, you do a little bit of both. You help answer questions for people that are struggling with a system that does not favor working with them very well, does it?
No. And one of the things I thought we would talk about, and I'll jump into that part right now, is the effect of the government shutdown on Social Security. And when this first started being discussed, we got a whole bunch of calls. Am I going to get my check? How am I going to live without my check? And getting checks is not an issue. The Treasury is still open. People are still getting their direct deposits. That part isn't an issue. What has become an issue, and they're really trying hard, and I give the workers so much credit, but processing is slowing down, and responses at the district offices are slowing down, and access by telephone is slowing down. And these are federal employees, just like all the others, caught up with the government shutdown. But while they're trying their best, the impact is not on receiving the benefits. It's the impact is on processing the paperwork, the applications, the hearings, and things like that.
Are the offices open or are they closed? And if they're open, are these workers that are working unpaid and hoping that they're going to get paid at the end of it?
The offices are open. I believe they're unpaid.
I
don't think they're getting paid. But they are still doing their jobs. They are still answering phones. It's just the stress level gets high on them, the numbers and the volume of calls, because as we've talked about in the past, Social Security Administration right now is horrifically understaffed. And they are staffed right now at 2009 staffing levels.
Mm.
And we know that since 2009, it's been anywhere from 10,000 more people a month have gone on to Social Security retirement as the baby boomers have aged out, and all the people going on disability and all the people going on Medicare and all the survivors claiming benefits. And we're staffed at levels that are 16 years behind that.
Wow.
So it's just unfair to the employees at Social Security.
Especially now that they're more than likely not getting paid at the moment. So a little extra grace, both on the phone and in the offices on both ends, I think will help people out. They're doing their best, even though it's a complicated system. Jeff, we got a couple callers. You ready to take some calls?
Let's rock.
All right. Ron is on WGN. Hi, Ron. How are you today?
Thank you, guys. Attorney, I have a very, very close son. I'm just going to say my son. He's has been diagnosed with cancer
over
2 years ago. So he has not, his attorney, you know, filed. So in September, he said, because, you know, I have to do a lot of financial support. And so in September, he said that a determination was going to be made. So I asked him, what was it? He said, then they told him, well, it'll be another 30 or 90 days. Can you explain? I told my wife something just not seem right, and I've been waiting to ask you this question.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Let me just make sure I understand, Ron, and then I'll have Jeff if he has any follow-up questions. So your son, I cannot believe that he's dealing with a cancer diagnosis. I'm so sorry.
He was working and ended up with cancer.
Ugh.
You know, he was working and he has
applied for SSDI, and they just haven't done the application, or was he accepted and the payments haven't come through? I just want to understand what's happening.
Yeah, I think he was accepted. No payments have not come through. And you know what's so frustrating? Because he had called me and said, well, can you go and pick up my medication? I mean, it's more, and look, I'm 69 years old. I don't take that much medication. And it just, I just don't understand that they just keep telling him. And I know cancer, I mean, that's a serious disability. Mm. And so I don't know if it's that.
Well, let's get Jeff. Yeah, I can hear the pain in your voice, Ron. Let's get Jeff to weigh in here. He's the expert. Jeff, you hear him anything like this?
Thanks, guys. Appreciate you all so much.
Ron, don't go away. First question, because I was confused by your statement. Was your son approved already, or has he applied and has not gotten a decision yet?
You know what? Maybe he wasn't approved because they said a determination had to be made.
So maybe it's still in the process.
It sounds like they haven't made the decision yet. So one more quick question without trying to pry. But it does make a difference. What kind of cancer does he have? Because Social Security treats different types of cancers differently.
It's like a bone cancer. It started like in his chest, but it's a very serious cancer because, like I said, he takes multiple medications and it goes all through his body.
Oh no!
So it sounds like it's metastasized cancer.
Yeah, that's it.
So here's what I want you. Do you have a pen and a piece of paper?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I want you to write down these words, and then I want you to Google it, or have your son do it. It's called compassionate.
Compassionate.
And the second word is allowances.
Compassionate allowances.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Social Security has said some types of cases we pay all the time. And if we pay them all the time, why are we bothering to put people through this whole long, slow process? Let's just put them in pay status. And some of these conditions are called compassionate allowance conditions. Some are really obvious: brain cancer, Alzheimer's, Huntington's disease, things that you know people are never going to recover from. Some are very, very, 16-letter names and you'll never see them. But some things like bladder cancer are. So depending on the type of cancer your son actually has been diagnosed with, he should have, if he falls into the compassionate allowance condition, that should have been expedited and approved immediately.
Jeff, can they call you up and talk to this?
Sure.
Because, Ron, as you know, we got to scoot along here. We got Al waiting, too. And it's such a sad case you're dealing with. But I feel like a follow-up
thank
Jeff.
Thank you so much.
No, for
love
sure. So what's the phone number, Jeff?
Call us at 312-431-1000 and ask for Kelly and tell her that you and I spoke on WGN. And she will either be able to answer the question or she will get the facts and then tie me down and we'll get back to you with the information.
All right, Ron. Thank you and take care, okay? Let's go to Al, who has a question. Hi, Al. You're on WGN.
Hi. Hello. I'm on Social Security and making just under $20,000 a year. Am I eligible for money from SNAP?
Okay, and so that's just $20,000 on just normal Social Security. You're not on SSDI or SSI.
Normal.
Okay, Jeff, do you know that, or do you want me to look it up maybe during the break? Because I know you mostly focus on SSI and SSDI. I don't know if you happen to know that off the top of your head or not.
I don't, and every state is different.
Okay.
So you the $20,000 a year, that's what you're receiving in your SSDI benefits?
I don't think it's SSDI. It's just normal Social Security.
Normal Social Security.
Social Security.
I live
retirement.
In Indiana.
Oh, Indiana. Okay.
So you're just going – every state rule has different rules. Indiana is not one of the more empathetic jurisdictions in the country. They're a little more rigid. So what you'll have to do is – there's one of two ways you could do it. You could either contact the Indiana Department of Human Services. They have some type of agency that administers that program. Or here in Illinois, what I would tell you to do if you lived in a county, in a township, every township has a caseworker that can answer those questions. So you may want to find out who in your county or township in Indiana does the community support work, and they'll be able to give you that information. And
Jeff, I was able to find an article that I think lines it up pretty well. I agreed to check with those forces of people as well. Al, is it you alone in the house, or how many people in the home?
Just me only.
And you're bringing about $20,000 in income. It's all from Social Security.
Correct.
Okay.
Only Social Security.
It looks like Indiana's SNAP income limits, so the top threshold would be gross income 130% of poverty. I mean, you're right there. It's $1,696 a month. You're at $1,666. So you're right at that threshold. And so I would, Jeff, who did you say to reach out again? I want to make sure Al gets the information.
So there would be an Indiana agency that administers that. In Illinois, it would be Department of Human Services.
Yeah.
But he could find the Indiana agency, or he has a county, or if, I don't know if Indiana has townships anymore, but certainly he lives in a county, and that county has people on the staff there that are supposed to help with constituent questions like this.
Yeah, that makes sense. Are you good with the internet, Al, or no?
No, I don't have it.
Oh, you don't have it. Okay. I'm just trying to find a phone number for you. Hang on the line, Al. I'm going to try and, during this commercial break, find something for you. I have the website, but I've got to be able to find a contact phone number for you. Okay, Al?
Okay, thank you.
Iridian's going to put
good
you
luck,
on hold.
Al.
Yeah. I just want to get answers to this, because I'm sure there's other people going through the same thing. In fact, I think I may have found it, but we'll give it to him offline. I'll tell Iridian to do that. All right, Jeff, I'm going to put you on hold for a moment. Before I do that, let's just give a recap here. And we got the whole next half hour as well for people to call in, 312-981-7200. Before we start getting a million Social Security questions, which are totally legit, you primarily do SSDI and SSI. Let's remind people what those two things are.
So there's two programs, Social Security Disability Insurance, and the other program is Supplemental Security Income. Both programs are intended to help people who are suffering from really severe medical problems, who are unable to work because of the symptoms from those conditions, and they may be eligible for either of those programs depending on whether they've worked, paid into the system, their resources. There's a bunch of other questions. But we work with people who have serious medical problems where the doctors and the medical tests show that it'd be impossible for them to work.
Okay. And you help people with the process through the application better at the beginning to get you before they've already been denied once, because you work through all the permutations and the evidence and all that. But anywhere along that journey, if someone's been denied, call you and you can help them, or at least talk to them about if you think they have a case.
We'll talk to everybody, but we actually prefer to be hired before they even file, because then we can teach them what they need to do while the case is pending to create the evidence. How they communicate with their doctors, number one, affects their health care, and then number two, affects the quality of the charts, which we use as the evidence to help them.
And the number, Jeff?
312-431-1000.
John Hanson, this is Let's Get Legal, just for another 26 minutes, and I say that because what undoubtedly happens with Jeff Rabin and some of our other guests is people wait till 2:56 to call, and then it's too late. So if you have a question about Social Security Disability Insurance or SSI, 312-981-7200 is the number. Someone says, what is the name of the person you're speaking with that helps with applications for Social Security disability issues? It's Jeff Rabin, rkblegal.com. Jeff, is that where you want people going for the website?
Absolutely.
312-431-1000 is Jeff's number, as we're going to go to the text line with more questions. But 312-981-7200 is our phone number right now. And we had a great text coming in. I think this is exactly the kind of question that we want to have asked. From the 331, my spouse has an autism diagnosis, and that diagnosis states requires assistance. And in parenthetical, the person notes, it's the lowest degree of assistance required, but it is required. We are Illinois residents. Is she a good case for SSDI? There's a follow-up question I'll ask next. But let's talk about autism and SSDI, Jeff.
Autism is a really challenging Social Security disability case. And the reason for that is, my guess would be for this person, they use that phrase, high functioning. Because remember, Social Security is not about diagnosis. Social Security is all about the medical evidence of the symptoms and how those symptoms impact this particular person's ability to do simple, low-stress, no-lifting type jobs. Now, Social Security has very specific medical guidelines for hundreds of different conditions, and they have some for autism. But the autism, they're called the listings, are very, very strict. And for autism, they focus on the inability to communicate, qualitative deficits in verbal communications or nonverbal communications, along with significantly restricted repetitive patterns of behavior. These are for people with really, really severe autism, and they're pretty obvious. When people call me in this situation where we have higher functioning individuals, it's much more challenging to prove disability. But the answer, that's a lot of words. The answer is it's possible, but again, it would go back to the medical evidence. We would be looking at the records of the treating psychologist or therapist or psychiatrist. What are they documenting regarding this woman's inability to be around people and to interact with people? What are they documenting regarding her ability to sustain concentration and persistence? And what about her ability to manage her life? Can she get out of bed and shower and clean the house and cook a meal and show up and deal with stress and change on a regular, consistent basis? If there's deficits in those areas, we can get benefits if we can prove it. And proof, again, as we've talked in the past, is all based upon medical records and charts. Social Security will never deny the diagnosis of autism. But what they ask is, so what? Why can't she work? What are the symptoms? And how do those symptoms impact her ability to do those basic mental motions of a job?
The follow-up was, I know some people get paid as caregivers. Is that an option for us, me as a caregiver? Is there a caregiver SSDI benefit, or is that something else perhaps they're thinking of?
That comes from the Illinois Department of Human Services, public aid. They do have some caretaker programs. I would go to the local township caseworker. Every township in Illinois has a caseworker whose job is to help community people with those questions and go over your facts and see if you can get some reimbursement for the income loss and the time you have to spend providing care.
Okay. I have a follow-up question then regarding autism, specifically when you're talking about someone that has severe or very noticeable symptoms related to communication or inability to do sort of some basic jobs. And I hope nothing that I'm saying is insensitive, because I know this is a touchy topic with a lot of people. But Jeff, let's say someone has been that way their entire life and they now are over the age of 18. I know there's a requirement for number of quarters having already worked, if I'm not mistaken, to qualify for SSDI. What about someone that has been like this their entire life and has never been able to work? Is there benefits under SSDI for this person, in the hypothetical I'm saying, or not?
So the answer again is maybe, and let me explain it. And this also takes some family planning. So SSDI does require that the person paid into the FICA system. However, if we can prove that somebody is totally disabled before age 22 and they have a parent who is on Social Security disability, or a parent who is on Social Security retirement, or a parent who passed away covered under the Social Security Act. In that event, the person can collect SSDI based on their parent's account. They would collect 50% of whatever the Social Security benefit is for their parent. So they have to be totally disabled before age 22. And have a parent either on disability retirement or who passed away covered under the act. If that is not feasible, then the other program you look at is SSI. And here's where some family planning becomes important. SSI requires that we prove total disability, the same medical test, but the claimant, this 18-year-old, must be indigent, and that's a legal term here. So indigent for this purpose means no money coming into this person's life directly, and less than $2,000 in non-excludable resources. So non-excludable resources, they're allowed to have a car because they got to go to the doctor and the hospital and the pharmacy. They're allowed to own a house if they're living in it. But they look for bank accounts, savings accounts, IRAs, 401ks, grandma's account that she set up in the kids' name to help them in the future, which would be a poor financial plan, cash value, life insurance, things like that all count against the $2,000 limitation. So if the family plans it starting, let's say, age 15, 16, and then make sure there are no assets in this child's name, then when the child hits 18, and this happens fairly often, then they can call a firm like ours and we can counsel them on, well, these will be the facts that Social Security is going to be looking for in the medical charts. Let's go file an SSI application. Now, SSI doesn't pay a ton of money, but it does. What it does do is, it's at least under the current laws, it secures access to Medicaid. So they will always get some monthly income from SSI. This year it's $967 a month. They will also have access to Medicaid.
Okay.
And they will also have food stamps.
Okay. And all the three of those things can certainly be a help. But like you're mentioning, if I'm not mistaken, the SSI payment is like 800 something a month, right?
It's, this year is $967 a month, which still leaves a single independently living, totally disabled individual 25% below the poverty level in the United States. So a lot of these things you hear from congressmen about how people are cheating to get on SSI because they live so comfortably, nobody anywhere lives comfortably on $967 a month.
I want to just go back one second to make sure I understand about the situation of a child who then becomes an adult, has never worked, and is not able to work because of their disability. You mentioned that if it happens and you can show that they were totally disabled before the age of 22 and that their parent is currently or has deceased but was under the coverage of SSDI, they are eligible for SSDI payment. Is that what I just said true before I go on to the follow-up? No, okay.
It's not whether they have to be actually on the SSDI program. So the parent has to be receiving SSDI, or the parent has to be receiving Social Security retirement, or the parent had to have passed away but had paid in enough quarters to be eligible for Social Security benefits.
So if the parent is receiving Social Security because they're retired, that isn't eligibility enough if you prove the other thing, that the child was totally disabled before age 22.
Then they can collect 50% of their parents' benefit amount.
I see.
And they get Medicare, and it's not means tested like SSI is, so there's less estate planning issues, there's different return to work rules. If we can get somebody these benefits, disabled adult child benefits, that's a good thing. It all depends, again, on medical evidence. This is when we encourage parents who are considering, should my child apply or not, when they know in their hearts this person really can't work full-time, let's look at an application before age 22 while the evidence is present and fresh and available, and we can try to establish total disability before that age.
Just to make sure, and I'm sure some listeners are going, he already explained this, John, but I want to make sure. So if my son is 22, and I can show that he has been totally disabled since before that age, yet I'm only 56 and I'm not receiving Social Security yet, even though I'm still paying into it, my child is not eligible yet until I start receiving Social Security.
Correct.
Okay. And again, I know people are screaming at their radio right now. Jeff, that's okay. That's what we do here. Help people out. The number to reach you is
312-431-1000.
We'll say it a couple more times before 3 o'clock. But much like Cinderella at midnight, the magic going away, the magic that Jeff and I have right now on the radio goes away at 3 o'clock. So get your questions in right now. 312-981-7200. If you think it's super confusing and you're confused by something, that's okay. That's basically where I am all the time on this program. And that's why the experts help us out. And they'll help you out too next. Jeff Rabin is here for a few more minutes. Get your calls in now, 312-981-7200. He can help you with any questions about SSDI and SSI. And Jeff, as I think the texters have demonstrated, and me as well, this is confusing. And there's so many different programs out there that help, which is a good thing, state, local, federal. But it's often almost such a web that people don't know where to call to get any help at all.
It's interesting. It is a hodgepodge of programs, some coming from one department of the government, some coming from the other. So let me use this as a shout out for a local branch of government that is typically ignored or denigrated, and that's our townships. And, you know, townships are sort of a middle level of government between counties and cities or villages. And the townships are the ones that do things like take care of all the extra roads and highways, help with the sheriffs. And they also all have a staff person who deals with community concerns like this. And they really, those people are really, really smart when it comes to all of the different programs like SNAP and LIHEAP and disability. And they can help you work your way through those. So take advantage of your township officials. They care. And I've met a lot of these people over the years, and they do really, really good work.
I'm glad you're demystifying that, because honestly, Jeff, I wasn't exactly sure what a township does. I know Downers Grove has the village, the mayor, the village board, the village council, and all that. But then we have like a Downers Grove township office right off of Ogden. And I'm always like, well, wait, what do they do? And so they kind of fill the gaps in some of this stuff.
Absolutely, and especially like if there's unincorporated areas of Downers Grove that don't fall directly within a township, within a city, I mean, the township maintains those roads, and the township provides police services, and the township provides these kind of community support services. In fact, your township is actually a really good one.
Ooh, nice.
And I've dealt with their staff. They run a food pantry. They run all types of social service programs. You know, one of the things I say about townships to people is anything any other branch of government doesn't want to do, they shift down to the township.
Hmm. And even I don't have to live in the unincorporated area to get the benefits.
That's correct. You're paying, you're supporting that township with your tax dollars. So as long as you are in that township, they will help you.
Okay, that is really, that does help. 'Cause honestly, I was like, what happens in that building? Okay, now I know, and I'm glad they do good work out in DG, and I hope they do in your township as well, listeners. Let's get a 312 asked. I see that Social Security benefits will be going up because of, as always, because of the inflation rate. Does cost of living adjustments also apply similarly to SSDI and SSI? Good question.
Excellent question, and the answer is yes. In fact, the COLA was just announced about a week ago. And it is 2.8%, which is a help. It will raise the SSI benefit next year from $967 a month to $994 a month. So that does help people some. However, the inflation rate in September for the United States was 3%. So how they calculate the COLA is sort of a complicated formula based upon the average inflation rate for 3 months in the middle of the year.
Yeah.
And so
It lags.
So we got it. We'll get a 2.8% increase. If inflation continues at a 3% level, that means people that are on Social Security retirement, people who are on Social Security disability, people who are living on survivor's benefits are all going to fall further behind. In addition, the Medicare Part B premium is going to go up. So even though you may get a 2.8% increase in your check, a hunk of that is going to go to Medicare to pay your Part B premium. Basically, you're not getting far ahead with that COLA.
Yeah, I just remember 2022 in the middle of that year when inflation was at 9.2%. And the COLA increase for that year, because it was based on the middle of 2021, was so far behind that seniors, yes, they got the quote-unquote catch-up after the 2022 COLA into 2023, but it's a slow thing, Jeff. I know you don't want to just react to these things every month to month, but maybe these things can be done every 3 or 6 months, because some seniors that are living literally dollar and cent, month to month, you know, a mismatch between the COLA and the actual what's happening in your grocery stores makes a huge difference.
when you're dealing with checks for 70 million plus people, which is what Social Security does every month, if you were going to start adjusting it for COLA every few months, you would blow up the computer system.
It would literally just explode.
I mean, I don't know that there's enough AI available in the system to handle that, and the stress it would cause on the future of the trust funds. You are absolutely right. That's why when you hear a lot of the nonsense on places like the Wall Street Journal or certain people in Congress about all the abuse of Social Security, no illegal immigrants are getting SSDI or SSI unless they've done an incredible job forging papers. It just doesn't happen anymore. But nobody lives comfortably on these benefits. They don't pay anywhere near. People go on disability because they have to, not because they want to.
Right. And also we should note, I'm sure there are some people that start collecting SSDI because of an injury, a diagnosis. Although, again, it's not diagnosis-based, it's symptom-based. But, Jeff, you've always said the goal of it is to be a bridge to get you eventually back to work and off SSDI.
And that's important because, again, it's so hard to live on these checks. So some people are never, ever going to go back to work. If you have somebody with, severe multiple sclerosis and they're wheelchair bound, they're not going to be able to go back to work very easily. But some people that have a condition, it could be anything. It could be rheumatoid arthritis. It could be a severe back injury, but eventually going to recover after surgery. They can improve and can return back to work, and that's your success story. When I represent young people with mental illness, and because of my NAMI work, we do a lot of work with people with mental illness. And my goal with those young people is not to get them on the program for a long time. It's to use it as a bridge while we have a line, while you treat, recover, retrain, and then return to the workforce.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I appreciate all the work you do for NAMI. We do have an extra, 30 seconds here. Any shout-outs you want to give to NAMI, remind people what it is, and anything cool upcoming that you're working on?
So it's the end of the year, so all NAMIs, especially ours in Cook County North Suburban, are in our annual appeal time, trying to ask our community to support our work, because all NAMI services are free. I'm actually talking to you, John, near your home. I'm sitting at College of DuPage in Glen Ellen. I'm going to be representing NAMI in about 15 minutes on a panel at the Regional Rotary Convention for Rotarians from Northern Illinois and Southern Wisconsin. NAMI is just, we're doing incredible work. We're doing more and more reach out to minority communities. In our NAMI, we started a new peer-to-peer program, a class for 9 weeks to help people work with their peers with mental illness to try to educate themselves and learn more techniques for coping and improving their lives. It's just an amazing agency and group of lay people who come together to try to improve the lives of individuals and families dealing with mental illness issues.
And for those who are like, well, NAMI, what? National Alliance on Mental Illness is, I believe, what the acronym stands for. I just want to mention that, Jeff, because when people call you to help out with SSDI and SSI, it's sometimes nice to know who they're chatting with. Not just someone trying to get a couple bucks off someone who is in a tough spot, but someone who's literally just trying to help them get what they've paid into and deserve and need for a little while. But also someone with an eye on the broader health and mental health aspects of our community. I think that's great, Jeff. And, you and I have gotten to meet now a couple times here in studio or over the phone, and you do a lot of great work. The number for you, 312-431-1000, yeah?
That will get us.
312-431-1000. And the website, Jeff?
Is rkblegal.com.
I love it. Jeff, good luck today on the panel and all that you're doing. We'll talk soon, okay?
John, thank you for all that you do. Thank you.